Let's call this meeting of the Senate Judiciary Committee to order. It is 1:30 p.m. on Friday, April 21st, 2023. Before we begin, I want to thank Carrie Cooper-Ryder, the Senate Judiciary Secretary, who makes sure we have a transcript of our meetings, and Doug Bridges from the Juneau LIO, who makes sure we have sound. At this time, I want to remind committee members and those in the room to please silence your cell phones. Present today, we have Senator Giesel, Senator Tobin, and myself, Senator Klayman. Senator Keel is, I think, in Senate Finance, and Senator Coffin is excused. We have a quorum to conduct business. Our first order of business today is Senate Bill 84, Money Transmission Virtual Currency, sponsored by the Senate Rules Committee by request of the governor. This is the first hearing of the bill in the Senate Judiciary Committee. Here to introduce the bill is Robert Schmidt, Director, Division of Banking and Securities, Department of Commerce, Community and Economic Development, and Dean Fleener, Financial Examiner with DCCED. I'd note that Senator Keel has also joined us. Please begin your remarks. You're already here, and just identify yourselves for the record.
For the record, my name is Robert Schmidt, and I'm the Director of the Division of Banking and Securities. Thank you for holding this hearing to discuss the Money Transmission Modernization Act. This bill impacts an industry that Alaskans use thousands of times an hour, involving billions of dollars a year.
Can you bring the microphone a little closer?
Better?
Yeah, right, kind of right up next to it.
Very good. About half of this 50-page bill is dedicated to standardizing and streamlining the process of obtaining a license, examinations of licensee safety and soundness, and standardizing procedures for licensee mergers. The bill introduces cryptocurrency standards, including disclosures, permissible investments, net worth requirements, and consumer protection provisions. The bill clarifies relationships where a local delegate transmits money on behalf of a licensee. Historically, these have been some of the most problematic areas of money transmission in Alaska. Most significantly, this bill allows multi-state cooperation in licensing so that states can leverage each other's resources in protecting our residents. Why do we need to update our law? The current money service law took effect in 2008. It was passed by the legislature in 2007. The model law it was based on was written in the mid-2000s. Mobile payment apps did not meaningfully exist at that time. The first iPhone wasn't introduced until 2007. Alaska's laws are in serious need of updating to keep up with technological changes. We need to standardize the process for applications and examinations. This need for modernization is widespread, with 14 states having passed all or sections of this model law as of April 2023. This bill has become law, or at least has been introduced in half of all states at this time. I'm going to provide some brief data on the scope of the money transmission industry in Alaska. The industry grew from $1.6 billion transmitted to, from, and within Alaska in 2019 to over $7 billion in 2021. There was then a decline to $5.8 billion in 2022. Substantially all of that decline was driven by volatility in virtual currency, also known as cryptocurrency. This graph shows the growth in the number of times Alaskans use money transmission, regardless of transaction size. In 3 years, the number of transactions has tripled from 10 million to over 31 million transactions. In 2022, Alaskans used money transmission an average of 3,540 times an hour, 24 hours a day, 365 days a year. This growth has been driven largely by mobile phones and payment applications. Using money transmission services like PayPal or Cash App is now common. In the time it takes us to finish this presentation, Alaskans will have used mobile payment applications over 1,000 times. I would also note that if you have a smartphone, it is either an Apple or an Android device. If it's an Apple, you have Apple Pay embedded in your phone. That is money transmission. If you have a Google Android device, that has Google Pay embedded in it. Everybody that has a smartphone in Alaska, whether or not they use it, has a money transmission service embedded in their smartphone. Let's see here. More companies are entering the money transmission industry. As of December 31st, 2022, Alaska had 168 money transmitter licensees. That's a fifth.
Oh, here we can sign you on this.
That's a 51% increase in 5 years. These are some of the most complicated applications the division handles. I would also note of those 168 licensees, the top nine are performing over $100 million of business to, from, and within Alaska every year. Our top two money transmitters are each handling.
That sounds always different. Are we muted right now?
Yeah.
Brief at ease. Back on record. Please proceed.
Of the 168 licensees, the top nine are all doing a volume in excess of $100 million to, from, and within Alaska. The top two money transmitters are doing a volume in excess of $1 billion a year to, from, and within Alaska. Looking at what money transmission, what constitutes money transmission, you will see end-to-end money transmissions such as PayPal, Venmo, Cash App, Coinbase, Robinhood, those sorts of things account for 64% of money transmission. Stored value represents about 23% of the money transmission industry. A good example of stored value is reloadable Visa cards available in your local grocery store. Cryptocurrency represented a little over 10% of money transmission in Alaska based on value in 2022. The remaining money transmission, less than 4%, was traveler's checks, currency exchange, and check cashing services. The division has been asked if it might be better if the federal government preempted regulation of this field. Alaska would be a minority of one if it advocated for preemption. No state regulator, not Connecticut, not Kansas, not California, not Texas, no one, wants the feds taking over this industry. No industry group, not PayPal, not Cash App, not Venmo, not Western Union, not any of the industry associations that have written in support of this bill support federal preemption. States have regulated money transmission for well over a century. We have the expertise and the examination infrastructure that the feds completely lack. States are able to pivot and react more quickly as events transpire. And the Division of Banking and Securities responds almost 1,000 constituent calls and emails every year on various financial industry concerns. One of the worst responses we have to give is when we tell a constituent they have to call a federal regulator where they may not be able to speak to a person who can help them. I will now turn the presentation over to Senior Financial Examiner Dean Fleer. Mr. Fleer is our senior most money transmission examiner, conducting money transmission examinations everywhere from Front Street in Nome to Wall Street in New York City. He is a director on the Multi-State Money Transmission Examination Task Force and is exceptionally well qualified to discuss the real-world impacts this legislation will have.
Make sure you can hear me. Okay. For the record, my name is Dean Fleer. I'm a Financial Examiner 3 with the Division of Banking and Securities. This bill amends Title 6, Chapter 55 of the Alaska Money Services Uniform Act. The presentation provides a summary of the sections in this bill. We hope this document will be a useful tool to you and your staff as you review the elements of this legislation. You will see a lot of repeal and reenacts because this bill is adopting a model law.
All participants are muted.
The purpose of this bill is to replace existing state money transmission laws, to modernize licensure requirements, to add model language for the virtual currency industry, to allow the Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development to coordinate with other states in the regulation, licensing, and supervision to standardize the types of activities that are subject to licensing, to protect Alaska consumers, and to modernize safety and soundness requirements for money transmission. This is based on the model law, the key takeaway to note is that this bill was drafted by industry, regulators, and at the federal level. Section 1 adds a section of uncodified law explaining the purpose of the Act. Sections 2 through 4 refer to network supervision, a multi-state licensing process where one state reviews a license application and the rest of the states that have joined an agreement only look at their state-specific license items. Section 3 provides application requirements for a money transmission license and allows the department to change or update the forms to be consistent with the licensing requirements for the nationwide multi-state licensing system, also known as the NMLS or the registry. This is important because companies that transmit money do not want 50 different sets of laws to follow. Streamlining the initial application and renewal process so it's the same every year and in every state, and it reduces the regulatory burden. These changes will require less paperwork for companies, requiring less staff, and it gets their license approved faster so they can get their business up and running, and it says Alaska is open for business. Fees collected at the time of renewal will change with this bill, allowing details to be updated in the regulation. The current annual renewal fee is $1,000. With the new legislation, an annual renewal fee will be based on the licensee's total volume of money transmission in the state. This section will allow regulations to be written to create a tiered assessment based on a sliding scale determined by the volume transmitted to, from, and within the state of Alaska. We will take special consideration for small mom-and-pop businesses to ensure the first tier is not a barrier to entry for these small businesses. Updating the existing regulations to include the tier assessments will allow us to update the fees charged to cover the cost of regulating this industry and keep pace with the growth and innovation in this money transmission space. Section 6 allows numerous automated licensing procedures, including automated background checks. Currently, DBS staff spends in excess of 400 hours per year performing background checks. Section 7 provides a framework to regulate virtual currency. The bill introduces safety and soundness requirements for the transmission of virtual currency. It requires disclosures for virtual currency and increases consumer protection in the event of a current virtual currency bankruptcy. Sections 8 and 9 adds model law language relating to delegates. Delegates are local representative of an out-of-state money transmitter. We often see delegate relationships where a person operates money transmission as a side business. For example, a restaurant or a flower shop or a local grocery store with money transmission as a side business. These delegate relationships are often problematic with smaller businesses. This law clarifies those delegate requirements. Section 10 amends the department's powers with respect to examination. It allows the department to accept examination reports from other states, the federal government, or an independent accounting firm. This section requires the licensees pay all costs associated with the examinations, references confidentiality requirements, and eliminates the existing requirement to notify a licensee 45 days prior to an examination. Sections 11 through 15 amend requirements relative to reporting and change of control, including bankruptcies in key personnel, changes in key personnel, and utilization of the NMLS system to streamline reporting. Sections 16 through 18 make changes to records retention requirements and reporting requirements to conform with the Bank Secrecy Act and money laundering reports. Sections 19 through 28 clarifies allowable permissible investments. Money transmitters must have high quality liquid investments to satisfy their money transmission obligations. This bill would allow the department to add additional permissible investments in regulation that meet liquidity and quality standards. Section 29 adds safety and soundness requirements to money transmitters. Money transmitters would be required to have a net worth of $35,000 and requires appropriate bonding and security. Sections 30 through 37 increases the division's enforcement authority for both revocation and civil penalties. Sections 38 through 42 contain conforming changes and merges currency exchange into a single license with money transmission. Sections 45 through 56 contain notice requirements relative to consumer complaints and transaction receipts. Section 47 allows a money transmitter to determine whether a transaction is originated in Alaska based on information provided by the customer. Section 48 codifies requirements relative to receipts. Section 49 discusses timeliness of conducting the transaction. Section 50 provides refund rights for the customers. Sections 51 through 53 allow the division to adopt and assess fees to make sure they cover the costs of administrating the program and base fees on licensee volume. This is far superior to every business paying the same fee regardless of business size, whether it's our small mom and pop to our very largest money transmitter that you can imagine. Sections 54 through 62 provide updated definitions. Sections 63 through 65 contain conforming changes, such as short title and listing repealed statutes. Sections 66 through 70 contain transition provisions, with the department able to start adopting regulations immediately and make the bill effective January 1st of 2024.
Some last thoughts to leave the committee with. Why is this bill important? This bill will protect consumers. It will reduce regulatory burden. It adopts a model law that industry drafted with state regulators. It will prevent federal preemption by creating uniform statutes across the country. And this bill will allow the division to have the ability to update fees and activities that require a license from regulation to keep up with technology and innovation in this ever-changing financial industry. Events of the last year have demonstrated the need for modernization of Alaska's money transmission laws. We appreciate the committee's work on this important issue, and we hope we can continue working together to advance this legislation. Thank you for your time today and the opportunity to testify on behalf of this legislation. We'd be happy to answer any questions the committee might have.
Any questions from members of the committee? Senator Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Director, appreciate you bringing this bill. When I carried the first original 0655 chapter, I think it was only a 33-page bill. You've gotten us up to 55 pages of legislation, so, you know, well done. on the substance of it, there is a provision that I would appreciate your thoughts about, because I didn't super love it in 07, and it had to do with who's in control, who's considered to be a person with a controlling stake in one of these, and thus subject to the background checks, the oversight, and those things. I think page 22 of the bill is at, right at the top, sets that at 25%, and you know, with the understanding that this is just one of those, we want to avoid crooks in the money business, or folks with a history of money crimes, right? Is 25% the right level?
It is entirely possible that another percentage would be more appropriate. For example, in the mortgage industry and in other industries, that percentage is at 10%. And making that percentage 10% would certainly be consistent with what we are seeing and what we are doing in other industries we regulate.
Another topic?
Senator Keel.
Thank you. another topic in the bill that I think proposes some changes I'd like to understand a little more completely would be getting near the end on page 45, where we're in the receipt requirements. And I appreciate the modernization of the receipting rules from, as you noted, back before the iPhone was the real thing. But when you look at the exemptions from receipting requirements, there's one I have a question about, the one that gives me pause. I guess the question first is C2. It's at line 17. We exempt money received for transmission that's not primarily for personal, family, or household purposes. There are Alaskans who get their paychecks in cryptocurrency. Are they going to get a receipt? Is that money for personal purposes, or would we consider that a business purpose?
I'd like to defer that question either to my colleague, Dean, or to my chief of examinations, Tracy Reno, who I hope is on the phone, although I understand the phone system is being pushed to its limits today.
Right now, we only have you and Mr. Fleer here.
All right.
Through the chair, Senator Keel, my understanding is that there would be receipt requirements for a crypto transaction. Is that what you were getting at?
Mr. Chair, just a follow-up to clarify. Senator Keel. Thank you. The question would be that the receipt, there doesn't have to be a receipt if it's not for personal, family, or household purpose. I don't think your paycheck is a family or a household purpose.
Through the chair, Senator Keel, no.
Okay. That would not be considered personal purpose. My last one, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Keel, please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The exemption above that. Receipt requirements do not apply to money received for transmission subject to, and then there's a federal reference there, which is something in the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. Can you line out for us sort of what that covers?
Through the chair, Senator Key, I'll do my best here without the reference in front of me, but
I need to take a second and pull it out. That's fine. Are you going to follow up?
It's okay. I don't have it.
All right.
It's okay. Connected to the web. So I sent some information that's coming to your office about that federal, about the listing where it's talking about how much money's being sent, the name, the address, all the information's collected there. I think that will sufficiently address more accurately than what I can probably give you right now.
It sounds like you're going to get offline the answer. I encourage you to send that to the whole, all members of the committee.
We will do so.
Other questions from members of the committee? Hearing and seeing none, we will take public testimony on this bill at another time. But thank you very much for coming forward. We're going to hold this bill for further review. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Chairman.
Our second and final order of business today is Senate Bill 128, Commercial Salmon Fishery Closure, sponsored by Senator Olson. This is the first hearing of this bill in the Senate Judiciary Committee. And as an initial matter, I wanted to note that in my ninth year now in the legislature, I have never had a single piece of legislation generate as many emails and calls to my office as Senate Bill 28. I recognize and acknowledge that there are literally hundreds of people who have well-reasoned and passionate views on this matter. I am also aware that we already have more people signed up for public testimony today than we will be able to hear today when we adjourn at approximately 3 p.m. I want to make six things clear. First, this legislation will not move out of committee today. Two, we will not close the public hearing on the bill until all who wish to testify are given an opportunity to testify. I recognize that there are constitutional questions raised by this legislation, and we will not be reviewing those constitutional details in great detail today. Four, given the limited days left in this year's regular session, I do not know whether we will hear this bill again before we adjourn in the middle of May. You can continue to submit written testimony at any time online to senate.judiciary@akledge.gov. Please avoid sending multiple emails. I predict we will get through 20 to 30 people in our public testimony today at best. Here to present the bill is Senator Olson and his staff, Almeria Alcantara. I'll note for the committee that we have one individual online and available for questions, and that's Lee Baxter, an attorney with Schwabe, Williamson, and Wyatt. Senator Olson, if you would please come forward, identify yourself for the record and your staff as well, and you can begin your remarks.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. I just want to say how delighted I am to go ahead and present this bill in front of you, because I've had if you've had a lot of emails coming your way. I've had a lot of constituents that are in my district that are very concerned about the issue. For the record, I'm Donald Olson, Senator from Senate District T. Today I'm joined with my staff, Almeria and Kalcha, who will be providing the sponsor statement before I make a few comments regarding the legislation. Ms. Alcantara, with the chairman's permission, I will have Ms. Alcantara read the sponsor statement.
Ms. Alcantara, please proceed.
Hello, Chairman Clayman and members of the Judiciary Committee. For the record, my name is Almeria Alcantara, staff to Senator Olson. And I will begin with the sponsor statement. Senate Bill 128, an act temporarily closing the commercial salmon fishery and a portion of the Alaska Peninsula and Aleutian Islands and providing for an effective date. Over the last 3 years, Western and Interior Alaska have faced detrimental collapses in salmon runs along the Yukon River and Kuskokwim River. This collapse has led to fishery closures along the rivers and their tributaries for all fishing types, which has had a severe impact to the subsistence and personal use harvests that residents rely on for their cultural, financial, and physical well-being. In 2021, there was a return decrease for Yukon Chinook and Summer Chum of nearly 90%, which left residents along the Yukon and Kuskokwim struggling to make ends meet and put food on the table for their families. At the same time, however, commercial fisheries in the Alaska Peninsula and Aleutian Islands have had record high harvests with 1,168,601 chum bycatch. Historically, much of this bycatch happens in Area M, a mixed stock intercept fishery in the Alaska Peninsula, Aleutian Islands, and Atka-Amlia Islands. In February, the Board of Fisheries had the opportunity to address this issue and protect the people and salmon of the Arctic Yukon Kuskokwim region. They failed to do so by not passing Proposition 140. Proposed by the Fairbanks Advisory Fisheries Subcommittee, Proposition 140 called to reduce the commercial salmon fishing time in Area M. Due to the failure of the board to act in accordance with their constitutional obligation under the sustained yield principle and statutory obligation to provide reasonable subsistence harvesting opportunities under Alaska statute, the senator has introduced this legislation. Senate Bill 128, Temporary Closure of Alaska Peninsula Management Area M to Commercial Salmon Fishing, directs a temporary closure for commercial fishing in Area M from June 10, 2023 through June 30, 2023. This closure allows those fish bound for their natal streams in Western and Interior Alaska to have the fighting chance to reach their spawning grounds. Furthermore, while Senate Bill 128 addresses the concerns about the State and Board of Fisheries' constitutional, statutory, and treaty obligations, it also opens the conversation to how the State of Alaska can better manage our fisheries with current science, data, policy, and traditional ecological knowledge from Indigenous communities across the state. As a testifier from Queefluk said at the Board of Fisheries meeting this last February, I am asking on behalf of my village and the residents of the Kuskokwim and Yukon Rivers that you make decisions that will benefit all Alaskans, no matter how small it seems to be. We are asking to give the chance for some salmon to return to our rivers. We are asking because we want to see salmon in our smokehouse and freezers. We are not asking for money. It's just that we want to eat our food. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Senator... Any questions from members of the committee for the bill? Mr. Senator Olson, did you have anything to add?
Oh, sure. I have plenty to add, Mr. Chairman. But in the interest of time and the passionate people that are on both sides of the issue, I'd rather hear from them because those are the people that are whose lives are going to be affected, some adversely, one way or the other. And that's why it's such a hot issue. The only thing that I want to kind of point out is that the fisheries today are in a crisis mode. We know that because the fishing stock runs have been lower for the last number of years. And over the last 3 years, they've been so disastrous. We've had fishing disaster declarations that have gone on out there. People from some of the bycatch that they get are sometimes shipped up to the people on the Yukon so they can have fish. But that's not what they're used to. Let's just go back to what happened before, because I'm a true believer that those who don't remember history are condemned to repeat it. If we go back to the 1741, when Vitus Bering, the Danish seagoing explorer on contract of the Russian Tsar, found land as he was over here on this side of the dateline, or what is now the dateline, he found a land that was brimming with resources. There was timber, there were animals, and there was fish. If you just fast forward again 40 years later to when, because of the unfettered harvesting that went on by the Russians, the sea otter population were in significant decline back in 1780 when Grigory Shelikov came across and was looking over the Russian interests over here on this side. In 1868, we started seeing fishing plants, especially on Kodiak Island and Karluk, that started preserving some of these fish. In the 1980s, the fish traps began to be used in the rivers, which were causing a fair amount of decline to the problems that were there. A lot of this stuff was influenced by many of the people from back east who were highly invested in what was going on up here, not just in mining, but also in fisheries as well, namely Simeon Guggenheim and J.P. Morgan and people of that magnitude, which we all know have gone down in history as very successful entrepreneurs, but sometimes going to measures that were somewhat uncalled for. In 1948, the fish traps issue became one on the ballot and was voted 10-1 against having them. Unfortunately, because we were a territory and we had just come out of being a district, Congress ignored this and continued on from there. However, 1960, after we became a state, Governor Egan, in one of his inaugural State of the State speeches, he stated that, quote, "We in the state of Alaska have been handed up the depleted remnants of what was once a rich and prolific fishery." And so because of that, he put drastic measures in place where he was closing the fisheries in Bristol Bay and Cook Inlet, were completely closed down during those period of time in the 1960s until the latter part when they had increased escapement up the rivers that were there, and so the fisheries were acquired. But the other big thing that happened was back when we first became a state, we had a 3-mile limit. And after that, there was a 12-mile limit. Then with the Magnuson-Stevens Act, it went to a 200-mile limit. So I'm saying that as we look at what's going on here, there's this colonial attitude that, you know, we'll just go up there and start fishing the stuff that's happening. And the reason I went ahead and patterned the bill in so short is because it was Proposition 140 was, and that was narrowly voted down by a vote of 3 yeas and 4 nays. And so it wasn't necessarily a board decision that rejected it. It was a majority of the board decision, which in our form of government, that tends to rule. And what I'm saying is that as we look at the issues that are out there, and when I fly up the rivers on the Yukon and on the Kuskokwim, and even in my area of Western Alaska on the Seward Peninsula, the fish camps that were once vibrant, where people were boating and you had lots of fish up on the fish racks, they're empty. Same thing with the fish, the smoke houses. You don't see smoke lazily wafting out of the chimney anymore because there's no smoke, no fish to smoke. So that's what's gone on. And as you see the fish camps, the fish racks, the fish smoke houses, it's kind of a disaster. The comment that was made to me, and I've never heard it, until the Commissioner of Fish and Game actually told me of this culture of genocide that's going on unless we can see what's happening. And I realize that this bill is a drastic step, but I don't think if we don't go back to what Governor Egan did back in the 1960s, we will be looking at an extinct fisheries. And so because of that, thank you very much for hearing this bill today.
Thank you very much. I know that Senator Bishop joined us just a couple minutes ago. Next, we're going to go to invited testimony. One question. Senator Keel, a question. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And thank you, Senator, for that description. I think these are critical issues. A slightly more recent history question. We're going to have to go back to Vitus Bering. As I was looking over the sponsor statement, I know that the measure in front of the Board of Fish did not pass. Was it then that the Board of Fish took no action, what happened?
That's exactly what happened. They didn't take any action whatever it was to try and up the number of fish that's going up the river to Yukon and Cusco, one of the most notorious. We've got treaty fish that are supposed to be going up there. They didn't do anything. I mean, there's plenty of things you could have done. You could have restricted not just the time that was in the proposal of 140, but you could have put a restriction on some of these ocean-going ships that go out there and harvest in the rough water down there in the oceans. I've flown down there, and I've commercial fished in the late 60s, early 70s, but back before limited entry. And so it's something that I'm fairly familiar with. And so, like I said, it was disappointing that no other solution was offered by the board. And that's why I decided to go ahead and put this legislation forward. But my staff, Miss Alcantara, has a better handle on what was going on.
Yeah, if I may,
please,
Chairman Klayman.
For the record, too, please.
For the record, Elmer Alcantara, staff to Senator Olson, through the chair, Senator Keel. There was action taken. So Proposition 140 in its original writing called for a 60% reduction time for the time for commercial fishing in Area M. The proposition that was passed in that Board of Fisheries meeting was only a 12% reduction time. So while there was some action, it was very little in comparison to what was originally in the proposition.
Thank you. I appreciate the clarification.
Mr. Chairman, can I just make one other comment?
Sure.
Those of us that are old enough to remember the race between Ronald Reagan and Jimmy Carter, back in 1980, I remember Carter, and this is what I've kind of run my life on. Reagan said to us, you know, are you better off now than you were 4 years ago? And that's how I kind of gained, you know, have I personally bettered myself for that? But you can look at this fisheries, and this fisheries is definitely a lot worse off, if not downright disastrous as to what's going on. And that's why I think we've got to go ahead and do something to try and find out what's going on. And what the people out in the on the rivers that say to me, they say, when you guys need to do something, I said, well, they're doing something. No. We don't want no more studies going on because we've gone on studies, and studies. And that's, you know, those of us that have education, that's what we kind of depend on. But the people that are on the ground that are less than sometimes don't have as much education as some of us have, you know, they don't want any more studying. They want something to be done. Because here's what they say. The people that can ill afford to live out here because they don't have fish, not be able to buy petroleum products, not be able to buy heating fuel, not able to buy shells, they're going to move out. There's going to be an exodus from there going into the Anchorage area. It's cheap energy there. The problem with that is those people usually are unskilled. And so because of that, they join the homeless population. And I'm not just talking about the men and women that are out there. I'm talking about children that go down there as well. So that's the big caution that I see as happening, the tragedy that's going on.
Thank you very much. Next, we're going to go to invited testimony. We are joined today first by Douglas Vincent Lang, Commissioner of the Department of Fish and Game. Mr. Vincent Lang, if you'd please come forward. Given the recognition, we have lots of folks that would like to provide public testimony. I'd encourage you to be fairly concise in your remarks.
I'll try to be concise. So thanks for the opportunity to speak with you today regarding South Alaska Peninsula salmon fisheries. For the record, my name is Doug Vincent Lang. I'm the commissioner for the Alaska Department of Fish and Game. Let me begin by saying the department shares Senator Olson's deep concern about the poor returns of Chinook, summer chum, fall chum, and coho salmon to western coastal Western Alaskan systems. The poor returns have resulted in fishery restrictions and closures that impact food security and subsistence and cultural activities. I have visited the region numerous times and listened to the testimony about the impact this is having. The words spoken are real and the impact is understood. Let me be clear. We understand and are sympathetic to the hardships and the restrictions and closures are creating for the people that are living in Western Alaska. As fishing is restricted or closed in river, people are asking what is being done to fisheries that intercept fish destined for these rivers. They're asking for some of these mixed stock fisheries to be restricted, or in the case of the legislation being discussed today, completely closed. It is important to note that nearly all salmon fisheries are represent mixed stock fisheries. They all harvest to varying degrees stocks of mixed origins. For example, the salmon fisheries that occur in the lower Yukon River are mixed stock fisheries in that they harvest a range of discrete stocks that occur upriver of that fishery, including some of Canadian origin. It is not until a fishery is prosecuted on the spawning beds that it is really truly not a mixed stock fishery. In the case of coastal Western Alaskan chum salmon, these fish are harvested in various mixed stock marine fisheries, including as bycatch and marine trawl fisheries targeting pollock and cod, as well as various directed salmon fisheries, including South Peninsula, Seine, and gillnet fisheries. However, it is important to note that they are also harvested in other fisheries, such as the Bristol Bay sockeye salmon fishery, as they move through that fishery on their way to the Kuskokwim and Yukon rivers. So the question is what is the acceptable level of harvest or intercept in these fisheries when subsistence is restricted or closed? Should all fisheries be closed if they harvest even a single chum salmon that is destined for coastal Western Alaska when these fisheries are closed or restricted? To get a handle on this question, it's important to collect data. It is important to understand the stock compositions of the salmon harvested in these mixed stock fisheries that intercept coastal Western Alaskan chum salmon. I will not talk about bycatch in this presentation. It is being addressed by the North Pacific Fishery Management Council. Instead, I'll focus on the fisheries that occur along the South Alaska Peninsula, as this is the fishery that is affected by the legislation being considered today. In response to the poor returns of summer chum salmon to coastal Western Alaska, the department initiated an evaluation of the genetic compositions of chum salmon harvested in the South Peninsula area mixed stock salmon fisheries last year. This is one of several marine mixed stock fisheries that are known to intercept fish of Bering Sea coastal origin. Our study was designed to assess whether stock compositions in this fishery changed from when we previously evaluated this as part of a WASIP study conducted over a decade ago. So what did we learn? From fish ticket information, we know that 817,279 chum salmon were harvested in South Peninsula fisheries in all of 2022. That is 78% of the recent 10-year average. Of these, 544,137 were harvested during June, which from previous studies is the time when summer chum of coastal Western Alaskan origin are harvested in this fishery. For the June fishery, about 58% of the chum salmon harvested were of Asian origin, and about 18% were of coastal Alaskan origin. That is to say, 6 out of every 10 chum salmon harvested were of Asian origin. In contrast, less than 2 out of 10 were of coastal Western Alaskan origin. Coastal Western Alaska represents a grouping of Bristol Bay, Kuskokwim River, Yukon River summer, and Norton Sound summer chum salmon. Unfortunately, we cannot differentiate stocks within this grouping with current genetic technology. Bottom line, our study showed that about 96,000 summer chum of coastal Western Alaskan origin were harvested in the South Penn fisheries last year during June. Based on preliminary run reconstruction information, this represents about a 6% harvest rate on these stocks as a group. Again, this number represents the total number of summer chum stocks of coastal Western Alaskan origin that were harvested. That is, these are not all of Yukon or Kuskokwim River origin. They are also of Bristol Bay and Norton Sound origin. This is the information that we presented to the Alaska Board of Fisheries at the recent information meeting to inform their discussions. So the two primary questions the board faced at their meeting were, what was an acceptable level of intercept harvest, and how could harvest of coastal Western Alaska chum salmon be reduced? Proposal 140, which was submitted by the Fairbanks Advisory Committee and supported by TCC and others, called for adoption of a previous management approach that restricted time fished. They postulated that chum salmon harvest could be reduced based on reduction of time alone. However, when this management plan was utilized in the early 2000s, it did not significantly reduce the harvest of chum salmon. And given the improved fishing power of the modern purse seine fleet, the department could not guarantee the chum salmon harvest would be reduced based solely on time restrictions only. Based on this and other information, the board chose not to pass proposal 140. It failed on a 3-4 vote. Instead, the board conducted deliberations, as they do, and they adopted a hybrid approach specifically designed to reduce the harvest of chum salmon in June. Their hybrid approach closed an area of known high chum salmon harvest, the Sinek Island sections, to commercial fishing for salmon during the June period. It reduced commercial salmon fishing time with purse seine gear in June by a minimum of 13%. It increased the length of the closure windows to allow chum salmon passage through the fishery. For instance, in the second week, they took time off the first seine fishery at the end of it and the beginning of the second seine period to allow for a 72-hour window to move chum salmon through during the second week of June. They also created chum salmon harvest trigger limits that restrict and potentially close commercial purse seine fishing in June if they are met or exceeded. A trigger of 300,000 chum was set if exceeded after the second opening to reduce fishing time by 44 hours for the third period. And a second trigger of 450,000 was set that if exceeded after the third period would close the fourth period in its totality for a reduction of an additional 88 hours. They also expressed an expectation and received a commitment from the fishing industry that the industry coordinate efforts to reduce chum salmon harvest based on a signed agreement that reduced harvest last year. This included waiving confidentiality and forming voluntary cooperatives. The cooperatives were formed last year at my urging and were successful in reducing chum salmon harvest from 1.1 million chum in 2021 to 544,000 chum last year. This proposal passed the board by a 4-3 vote. I want to note that many people were involved in this outcome, which occurred over a 7-day period, which public comment was taken, the committee of the whole discussion occurred, and numerous after-hour discussions occurred. As with all compromise solutions, people on both sides of the issues were not happy with the outcome. In-river users felt the board let them down by not adopting their preferred solution. South Alaska Peninsula fishermen felt they unnecessarily lost traditional sockeye salmon harvest opportunities. This season will tell the tale of the outcome. If the fishery is prosecuted, we will closely monitor it in season. We will also, assuming a fishery is prosecuted, conduct a second year of genetic sampling. If the fishery is canceled, we will not be able to conduct this study. We have also spoken with public safety to beef up enforcement to address the perceived issues of chum chucking that we heard at that board meeting. Finally, we will monitor the cooperatives to ensure they are operating as agreed to and envisioned. And if they're not, I will not hesitate to use my EO authority to address it. In closing, as with many Board of Fisheries decisions, also very similar to your legislative decision processes, not everyone is always happy with the outcomes. But in both cases, it's not for lack of thoughtful deliberation and consideration. With that, I'll close my comments and take any questions you may have. Thank you.
I don't see any questions from members of the committee. Thank you very much. Next up for invited testimony, we have Karen Gillis, Program Director of Bering Sea Fishermen's Association. I believe she's on the phone. Ms. Gillis? Ms. Gillis, if you want to identify yourself for the record, any affiliation you may have, and you could provide your invited testimony, I encourage you to be fairly concise.
Thank you, Senator Quinn, and thank you to the Judiciary Committee for this opportunity to speak with you today. I also thank Senator Olson for introducing Senate Bill 128 and Senator Kawasaki for co-sponsoring. My name is Karen Gillis. I'm here on behalf of Bering Sea Fishermen's Association, working to serve small belt fishermen in the Arctic, Yukon, Kuskokwim, and Bristol Bay regions of Alaska. We are in support of Senate Bill 128. We see this as a state issue solving a problem which the Board of Fisheries failed to effectively address. The current problem is that Area M management, for over a decade, has prioritized commercial fishing over escapement and subsistence in violation of Alaska state law and in violation of the policies that guide the Board of Fisheries' decisions. A number of facts regarding the situation are unarguable. ADF&G has documented the severe declines of chum salmon to Western Alaska rivers. Salmon runs in 2021 and 2022 have failed to meet escapement goals throughout the Yukon and Kuskokwim rivers, and subsistence harvest has been severely limited or totally closed throughout the season. In the past 2 years, ADF&G has documented that the Area M fishery efforts which are failing to meet escapement goals. The 2012 ADSMG Special Publication 1223 identified the stock composition of the chum salmon harvested in fisheries of the Western Alaska Salmon Stock Identification Program. Area M is composed primarily of migratory salmon pathways where discrete individual salmon stocks need to be protected from overharvest to prevent poor escapement. The weaker the stock, the more vulnerable it becomes as it transits Area M, such is the case now with AYK chum and Chinook, New Shigak chum and Chinook, Chignik sockeye and Chinook, and Cook Inlet Chinook. The law is clear. Ensuring chum salmon meet the escapement goals and subsistence needs in the AYK region is the number one priority of ADF&G and the Board of Fisheries under statute and the state constitution. Subsistence priority in the state statute says, if a stock cannot provide reasonable opportunity for subsistence use, all other uses must be eliminated under AS 1605258D4. In every other fishery in Alaska except Area M, the policy and practice of ADF&G is to manage to meet salmon escapement goals and, when necessary, close commercial fishing on a stock when escapement needs or reasonable opportunities for subsistence are not being met. Neither of these statewide requirements and practices are being applied to the Area M commercial salmon intercept fishery. In February 2023, the Alaska Board of Fisheries voted to allow the Area M fishery to continue to harvest Western Alaska chum with numerous openings lasting over 3.5 days, each without any meaningful windows for chum passage. For decades, AYK residents have voiced concerns about changes in salmon stocks that have sustained them for millennia. We are facing a multi-species salmon decline in Western Alaska, and we have not, and won't for the foreseeable future, provide for escapement or the subsistence priority, let alone in river commercial and sport salmon fisheries. Continued interception of migrating chum salmon in Area M as normal threaten the sustainability and future of coastal Western Alaska chum salmon and the fisheries they once supported. SB 128 solves the policy failure with statewide impact. Stakeholders have exhausted their administrative remedies at the Board of Fisheries. And what we know with certainty is there is ongoing commercial harvest on severely declined salmon stocks which are not meeting required escapement or subsistence food security needs. In-river commercial fisheries in the Kuskokwim and Yukon rivers are now non-existent.
Ms. Gillis, if you could conclude your remarks, I'd sure appreciate it. It sounds like you've got written remarks, and we'd encourage you to submit those in writing as well.
Thank you. In conclusion, we call on you to take action and provide lawful restrictions on a commercial fishery, in part to protect what is left of chum salmon populations. We ask for your support of Senate Bill 128 as a remedy to the Board of Fisheries' inability to follow the law and their own policies and regulations. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I don't see any question. Next invited testimony, you have Virgil Umfenauer calling from the Fairbanks LIO. Mr. Umfenauer.
What's that? Chairman, thank you for this opportunity to testify. My name is Virgil Umfenauer. I'm on the Fairbanks Fish and Game Advisory Committee. I served 3 terms on the State Board of Fisheries, and the proposal 140 they're talking about, I was on the board when that, and I really ramrodded that hard as I could as a board member to try to get a responsible fishery in Area M. And that was passed by a 7-0 vote by the board in either January or February of 2001. It was subsequently changed from 3 16-hour periods of fishing per week to 88 hours of fishing with 32 off for the month of June. The Area M fishery is the only fishery in the state that is not managed on escapement goals. All other fisheries in the state are managed on escapement goals. The Yukon River fishery is not just managed on our escapement goals in Alaska, but also in Canada. I also am still on the Yukon River panel, which before it became the panel, it was a negotiating group that negotiated the treaty with Canada. I've been on that since 1988. And the board also, at this last meeting, besides not complying with the constitutional mandate of sustained yield, They totally ignored the sustainable salmon policy, which is in regulation. It's by the AC 39.222. I'm going to read just a little bit from it because I'm one of the authors of that thing, this thing as well, when I was on the Board of Fish. A precautionary approach involves application of prudent foresight that takes into account the uncertainties in salmon fisheries. And it goes on to say that in salmon fisheries and habitat management, the biological, social, cultural, and economic risks and the need to take action with incomplete knowledge should be applied to the regulation and control of harvest. That where the impact of resources use is uncertain but likely presents a measurable risk to sustained yield, priority should be given to conserving the productive capacity of the resource. Something else the board did not do was they violated Alaska Statute 16.05.251, which is the allocation criteria that was written by the legislature. And I'm going to just go through it.
Mr. Ufenauer, because we've got a lot of people who want to testify, I'm going to give you just a little bit to conclude your remarks. I'm not going to let you read more from the legislative history, but if you could conclude your remarks, that would be great.
Okay. Number three of that, of the allocation criteria, is importance of each fishery for providing...
Mr. Ufenauer, you need to conclude or we're going to go to the next person.
Including just with this one thing, two things, real short. The opportunity to obtain fish for personal and family consumption. And number four, the availability of alternative fishery resources. We have none in the AYK, but Area M had 225 other commercial fishing permits, fish in 2021, besides their salmon permits.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Appreciate your testimony. At last, for invited testimony is Brian Ridley, also calling from the off-net with the Tanana Chiefs Conference. Mr. Ridley, if you identify yourself and any affiliation.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Thank you. My name is Brian Ridley, and I'm the Chief Chairman, President, and CEO of the Tanana Chiefs Conference, and I'm from the village of Eagle on the Yukon River at the Canadian border. I'm here today to testify in support of SB 128 and the idea of sustainable salmon management or the lack thereof, due in large part to the decisions made by the Alaska Board of Fisheries and Department of Fish and Game. It sounds like you're wanting us to speed up our process, so I won't duplicate what Karen covered. I'll skip down a little further. You know, after the Board of Fish, the 3 days of public testimony, including expert advice from world-renowned salmon fishery scientists, the Board of Fish ignored testimony and failed to prioritize sustainability and subsistence over commercial salmon sales, a blatant violation of regulatory and statutory requirements. In case anyone wants to argue this point, after the Board of Fish approved the current proposal, two of the four votes said they voted for the money in their closing open comments at the Board of Fish. TCC understands that the intercept of salmon in Area M and salmon bycatch in the Bering Sea pollock fishery alone are not to blame for the collapse of our chum and king salmon. However, the Yukon River in particular, the situation has become so dire that we've reached the point where every single chum salmon and Chinook salmon counts. The more than 18,000 people served by TCC already have taken the ultimate sacrifice by not fishing for salmon and not practicing our ways of life for years. The importance of salmon to our tribal communities extends well beyond nutrition, as salmon is essential to our physical, economic, cultural, and spiritual well-being. It's time that all Alaskans and our neighbors from the other states who make up the Area M commercial fleet join us in conservation efforts to rebuild our salmon populations before they go extinct and become endangered species. SB 128 has the ability to change the trajectory of salmon management in Area M and allow for salmon to return to the Yukon and Kuskokwim rivers. Area M has intercepted over 300,000 of our fish just in the last 2 years alone. And that's based on the state's last year's gene testing. So when they say there's no science behind this, this is the science of the state of Alaska. Our runs are so small that an extra 300,000 fish would make a huge difference to us. So for anyone to say that shutting down Area M will have no effect on Western Alaska rivers is simply not true.
Mr. Ridley, I would like you to conclude your remarks now as well.
Okay, I've got two little sentences. I'm sorry. I heard a state employee say when the crash started on the Yukon, they didn't realize how bad it was going to be, and they wished they would have done more early on. So now is your chance as the state of Alaska to correct this grave mistake. We need you to do the right thing here and shut down Area M, as was done 50 years ago in the early 70s. We need to rebuild our runs so that there are harvestable surpluses to feed our families and continue our ways of life. And we need you to support SB 128 to do this. Mati Cho, thank you.
Thank you very much. I don't see any questions from the committee. We're now going to open public testimony. There are, I think, at this point, more than 70 people that are in the queue. I'm going to take some in the room and also take online. We're going to start in the room with Ernie Weiss. If you're in the room, please come forward. We're going to limit public testimony to 2 minutes per person. I'll give you a gentle reminder and then cut you off harshly.
Yeah. For the record, my name is Ernie Weiss. I live in Anchorage, and I work for the Aleutians East Borough as Natural Resources Director. As such, I attend a lot of Board of Fish meetings, all of them this year, including the Alaska Peninsula Aleutian Islands Chignik Finfish meeting and the Arctic Yukon Kuskokwim Finfish meeting. The board's actions at the Alaska Peninsula meeting in February were based on science and included a robust public process, nearly 300 public testifiers and over 600 pages of written testimony. The board actions represent meaningful restrictions to the South Alaska Peninsula June salmon fishery with the intent to move more chum salmon through the area. These restrictions, coupled with the action plan enacted by the Seine Fleet, will significantly reduce chum harvest. The Seine Fleet's action plan, initiated in 2022, resulted in the lowest chum to sockeye ratio since limited entry was established. The new restrictions passed by the board have not even had a chance to be implemented. The science presented at the AYK and Alaska Peninsula meetings show that conditions related to climate change are the cause of struggling AYK salmon stocks, not Alaska Peninsula fishermen. And genetic testing shows that 80% of the chum salmon that are harvested in this mixed stock fishery are bound for places other than AYK, mainly Asia. The Aleutians East Borough wants these Yukon Kuskokwim chum stocks to bounce back. Closing the Area M June salmon fishery will not fix the AYK salmon issues, but it will hurt a lot of borough fishermen and communities. I think you'll set a terrible precedent by moving this legislation forward and overruling the Board of Fisheries' deliberative process. Please don't support Senate Bill 128. Thank you for the time.
Thank you very much. Next in the queue, we've got Abby Frederick. If you'd please come forward. And then after her, we've got Alyssa Rogers. Ms. Frederick, please state your name and please proceed.
Thank you, Senator. For the record, my name is Abby Frederick. I'm a 29-year resident of Juneau, and I'm here today representing Silver Bay Seafoods and our fishermen partners. We oppose Senate Bill 128, but we do stand with our fellow Alaskans that are concerned about Western Alaska salmon stocks. We support efforts to better understand the cause of these salmon declines and identify meaningful solutions. We unequivocally support solutions that strengthen all of Alaska because we all depend on healthy, sustainable ecosystems. Climate change is warming Alaska twice as fast as the rest of the United States. It's concerning to hear through extensive state and federal scientific reports the impacts that climate and ocean changes are having on some of our salmon stocks. With these changes occurring and with our commitment to meaningful solutions, we still can't support punitive actions like Senate Bill 128. These will devastate Alaska Peninsula, and they will not have the intended benefits to AYK neighbors and the salmon that they rely on. Despite the relatively low impact, the Board of Fisheries took significant action in February, and the Commissioner of Fish and Game covered those actions during his invited testimony, so I'll not cover them all, but while the board immediately restricted fishing 13% at a minimum, the additional actions in there could reduce that fishery quite a bit if there's a lot of chum salmon present. This program that the board enacted, coupled with the adaptive approach with the fishermen, I think is the best way forward. It brings everybody on the same team, the board, the department, fishermen, processors, communities, everybody looking at ways to truly pass more chum salmon to Western Alaska. We appreciate you committing to look at the legal issues and hold the bill while that continues, and thank you for allowing me to provide testimony today.
Thank you very much. Next in the queue is Alyssa Nadine Rogers.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Through the chair, my name is Alyssa Nadine Rogers, and I come from our Tsleil-Waututh Native Council on the Kuskokwim River. I am the Director of Natural Resources for our tribe. I come before you under Senate Bill 128. Yupiks are strong and resilient people. We adapt, change, refocus, listen, and have the most forgiving hearts. There is nothing else left but ashes of what was once the last pristine, unaltered, largest king salmon fishery in the world. Our tribe is heavily involved in our fishery through science and traditional knowledge. We have over 3,500 tribal members out of 5,000 that actually reside in the area. We have 84.6 Yupik people, percentage of Yupik people, which 24.6 of them are in poverty. Subsistence is our economy. Oret Tsleil-Wautuths are surviving legends of salmon fishery that was over-harvested, commercially driven by unrealistic sustainable yields, unjustified by escapement logic geared to sustain the Aleutian commercial fishing industry, and our people continue to thrive in the poorest economy through subsistence harvesting. We acknowledge and understand that Aleutian commercial fishing is the major industry that drives the state's economy, like oil. However, our fishery is not free like oil. The oil is poorly managed. That the oil alone can sustain the state's economy issues and surplus extra funding if it is corrected and managed properly. Why are we selling barrels of oil for dirt cheap and punishing our Alaskan people for the lack of the economic infrastructure? We have been sustaining ourselves on our fishery for more than 10,000 years. The ability to allow... I have one sentence left. The ability to allow for subsistence harvesting throughout the Arctic, Yukon, Kuskokwim, and Bristol Bay rivers. We support Senate Bill 128. Guyana, thank you.
Thank you very much. Next, we're going to go to the Anchorage LIO. The first one in Anchorage is Carlin Hoblett. Mr. Hoblett, if you'd identify yourself, please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, my name is Carlin Hoblett. I'm an Area Abstainers Association board member from False Pass, and I'm speaking on my own behalf. Please do not undermine the process that our state has in place for fisheries management. Hearing this bill is a disgrace to appointed officials who have dedicated their careers to fisheries science and management. If this bill passes your committee, it will undoubtedly set a dangerous precedent throughout our state government. Do you intend to question the integrity of the Board of Fisheries or discredit all of the time and resources that have been put forth by the Alaska Department of Fish and Game? There have been countless man hours dedicated to researching the salmon crashes in the Yukon Kuskokwim rivers, and they prove that area and fisheries are not a significant contributing factor. With that said, we've still implemented a self-management plan that will maximize the amount of chum and chinook salmon allowed to pass through the area. This plan has already come at a cost for area and fishermen. We have forfeited fishing time and areas, leading to loss of revenue in excess of 30% in most cases, with the potential of that loss being even greater with our revised plan. It has been stated that we are trying to take the law into our own hands by using this plan. We are not. Our interest as commercial fishermen, our interest as natives, are for the greater good of fellow Alaskans. Our mission is to conserve and rebuild those salmon stocks that are in danger while still being allowed to participate in the fishery that is the foundation of our region. SB 128 will not magically return salmon to those endangered rivers because climate change is the leading factor. All that SB 128 would accomplish is the crippling of hundreds of millions of dollars worth of infrastructure. It would be an economic disaster that would ravage thousands of people and households who rely on the Area M June salmon fishery. Air travel, lodging, food service, and fish processing.
Mr. Hobby, you're at the two-minute mark. If you'd conclude your remarks, please.
Okay. The amount of ignorance and disregard for people's livelihoods that bring about such bills as this truly deserves me. Please do not allow SB 128 any further action. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Next from the Anchorage LIO is Charlotte Levy.
Hi, for the record, my name is Charlotte Levy. I live in Anchorage, and I'm the Natural Resources Assistant Director for the Aleutians East Borough. I've actively engaged in the Board of Fisheries meetings and have worked extensively with the Area M fishermen for many years. Fisheries management is extremely complex, and as such, the state has developed a rigorous and comprehensive process for management, and the board receives a staggering amount of information and proposals for each and every fishery in Alaska. Extensive scientific background from the department, and the lived experience and knowledge of stakeholders through testimony. Board processes exist for a reason, because they require an extensive amount of resources, time, and subject matter expertise that's not appropriate or available within the legislature. SB 128 will set the precedent that undermines every board process in the state, which should be very alarming to you. I'll finish by reminding everyone about who the real people behind Area M are. The fishermen are predominantly Alaska residents. These are under 60-foot small boat fleets. These are subsistence users. And the same fleet is over 70% borough residents who live and work in our remote communities year-round. The borough is responsible for critical infrastructure such as schools, harbors, and transportation, and the Area M fishery contributes upwards of 28% of fish tax revenue to the borough. I'm seriously concerned about the legality of supplanting the board process, cherry-picking one fishery to shut down, which essentially seeks to value the lives of some Alaskans over others. The closure of this fishery will be the harbinger of borough and community collapse, with little to no gain to Western Alaskan communities. We'll open the door for these consequences across the state. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Next in the queue, also from Anchorage, is Dale Peterson. Mr. Peterson.
Okay, first of all, I'd like to thank the committee for this opportunity to speak. My name is Dale Peterson. I am Alaska Native, and I represent myself. I am a resident of Anchorage in an Area M fair and Setnetter for close to 50 years. I wholeheartedly oppose Senate Bill 128. We as communities just had to go through all this at the Board of Fish meetings in February. The Board of Fish meeting was well attended by hundreds of people from all affected regions. Although there are no winners at Board of Fish meetings, we always live with their decisions. It is going to set a bad precedent if the legislature overrides Board of Fish decisions based on politics. The board process works very well. Also, thinking that we would have a June season, lots of boat owners renewed their boat insurance policies, including June month, and have already paid tens of thousands of dollars for insurance. It makes ordering boat groceries for the summer complicated, not knowing how long we will fish. Lots of boat owners have ordered supplies to repair their June season fishing gear, thinking they would be able to fish. I think your time and effort would be better spent trying to address the fact that EYP salmon smolt are having a hard time surviving and why returning salmon are basically starving. We are all pretty sure this is due to poor ocean conditions. In summary, I'm asking you to not consider voting on this bill and letting Board of Fish and Alaska Department of Fish and Game do the jobs that they're great at doing. Thanks.
Thank you very much. Now we're going to turn to the Mat-Su, David Polushkin at the Mat-Su LIO.
Good afternoon, Chairman. Can you hear me?
Yes, please proceed.
Yeah. And Mr. Chairman, members of the Judiciary Committee, my name is David Polushkin. I have fished in Area M for 36 years. I'm a board member of Concerned Area M Fishermen. We represent 80% of the drift fleet in Area M. And I represent 54 fishing vessels from the Russian community that live on the Kenai Peninsula in Mat-Su Borough. We oppose Senate Bill 128. It will be a devastating blow to our fishery with no noticeable benefit to Western Alaska. This has already been tried when the Board of Fish cut significant amount of fishing time in 2001 to 2003 in Area M. It decimated the fishery in Area M and had no noticeable benefit to Western Alaska chum stocks. This bill is even more devastating because it also closes the north side of the Area M fishery. Why is this bill trying to close an area that does not catch chums bound for Western Alaska? What is the intention of this bill? This bill overrides the decision the Board of Fish made while receiving in-depth scientific reports, hundreds of public testimony, written comments, and a committee of the whole process. In all, it's thousands of pages that the Board of Fish went through to make the decision. Why is the legislature bringing up a bill reversing the Board of Fish process? The Board of Fish members are voted in by the legislature. Does the legislature not trust the Board of Fish that the legislature voted in to do the job? This is unprecedented and could have severe and detrimental effects on the future Board of Fish process. Please oppose Senate Bill 128. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Now turning to the Kodiak LIO, Connor Murphy. Mr. Murphy.
Hello. Can you hear me?
Yes. Please proceed.
My name is Connor Murphy, and I'm testifying from the Kodiak Legislative Office. Dear Chairman and members of the committee, I'm a lifelong Alaskan, a subsistence user, and a commercial fisherman. I'm a first-generation fisherman and pioneer in my stand net operation on blood, sweat, tears, and figuratively every dollar I own. Most of my income comes from my stand net operation in Port Moore on the North Alaska Peninsula, which will be shut down completely for the month of June under SB 128, which includes the North Alaska Peninsula districts as well. The North Alaska Peninsula is currently managed based off our local salmon stock escapements of the Bear, Sandy, Nelson, Ilmik, and Meshic Rivers. Last year in 2022, there were 154, I'll repeat it again, 154 chums caught on the North Alaska Peninsula in June, with zero genetic composition showing that any of these chums are going to struggle in Western Alaska river systems. There was not one proposal or testimony at the Board of Fish for closing the North Alaska Peninsula in June for chums bound for SEWAC river systems. This bill fails to grasp the awareness of the complexity of the Area M fishery, which includes our local salmon stocks. Overriding the Board of Fish fisheries process is a direct threat to every fishery in the state and all state board and committee processes. Fisheries are complex issues, which is why we should leave them off the legislative floor, the hands in the Board of Fisheries, as they have been since statehood. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. Next from Kodiak is Chelsea Randall. Ms. Randall, if you want to identify yourself, please proceed.
Good afternoon. Thank you, Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Chelsea Riddell, and I am a resident of Kodiak and the Assistant Director of Alaska Groundfish Data Bank, a member organization that represents the shoreside processors and trawl vessels mostly homeported in Kodiak. I am here today to voice our explicit opposition to Senate Bill 128. We stand in support of the Area M fishermen, but I won't waste my time repeating what was said during the very public process with ABF&G expertise and scientific data in February. Instead, I will speak to the larger issue, which is the dangerous precedent you could set for fisheries management in Alaska. As you know, the board is made up of experts and stakeholders who have the knowledge and the experience to delve deep into our nuanced and complex fisheries management issues. They are appointed by the governor and confirmed by the legislature, giving you control over who fills those seats. The rigorous nomination process and their expertise is why they have been given the authority over our state's fisheries. There is a public perception circulating that bodies such as the Board of Fish are somehow failing to act simply because they didn't select what the general public may perceive as the correct action. However, this could not be further from the truth. The Board of Fish made their decision and took action in February, despite what you may have heard in earlier testimony today. They took action to significantly restrict the Area M fishery while implementing adaptive measures which allow more chum to pass through, which is everyone's goal, including Area M fishermen, many of whom I know, trust, and respect greatly. Any action to further restrict the fishery outside of the Board of Fish process undermines the authority of the board on this and all future state fisheries management issues. Alaska has the best managed fisheries in the world, which are the backbone of our coastal communities, including Sandpoint and King Cove, both of which I have worked in. Moving this bill forward would open the door to regulate all fisheries issues through a legislative process lacking in scientific expertise.
Ms. Riddell, your time is up. If you would please conclude.
We hope that you will gravely consider the precedent that this would set and not move it forward. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Turning to the off-net, we've got Blair Hickson. Mr. Hickson, identify yourself and please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Blair Hickson. I'm calling on behalf of Anvik River Lodge. I grew up on the Anvik River. I've been up there for 28 years, and the Anvik River is one of the primary spawning grounds for the summer chum, which come up the Yukon River. We would have numbers of up to 40% of the Yukon chums would come up and spawn in our river system. We have now got numbers of chums ranging as low as 19 to 40,000, as opposed to our highs of 1.3 million. A lot of debates gone on whether or not the spawning rivers are still able to host these fish. I can guarantee you they are. The conditions on the river, the water temps have stayed fairly stable over the years. I am calling in support of this bill, and I hope that we can move forward because at this point in time, every salmon that comes up those rivers and spawns counts. And this goes deeper than just what the human use is. This goes into how many salmon have to come up that river and die every year in order for that area to maintain homeostasis, whether it be feeding the nutrients into the water, which feeds the bears, the plants, and et cetera. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you very much. Next in the queue is Vivian Carthuis, also on the off-net. And I apologize, I mispronounced your name, Ms. Carthuis.
Good afternoon, Chairman. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Thank you. My name is Vivian Carthuis. I serve as the Chief Executive Officer for the Association of Village Council Presidents, representing 56 tribes located along the Yukon River, Kuskokwim River, and Bering Sea coast in western Alaska. I am testifying today in support of SB 128. I'd like to thank Senator Olson for introducing the bill and the committee for hosting this hearing. We need the legislature to step in and protect the people of Alaska by passing SB 128 at the time when the Board of Fisheries is not doing its job and ignoring existing state law. The situation is critical and is an urgent matter for the whole state. The legislature has the power to take steps to address one of the greatest natural resource crises in Alaska and that we've ever seen. You must act now. The situation in Alaska reminds me of a line from a movie, Apollo 13. But in this case, Houston is Alaska. Alaska, we do have a problem. In fact, we have more than a problem. We have a generational crisis playing out in our villages, a food famine, a real humanitarian crisis. The impact on the state's residents exceeds over 120,000 people in the AYK region alone. The salmon crisis along the Yukon River, Kuskokwim River, and adjacent tributaries are in urgent need of a solution directed and led by the state of Alaska. Since 2020, chum salmon numbers have crashed in the YK Delta rivers in resulting in a failure to provide escapement and subsistence needs, the two highest priorities under the law.
Ms. Carthuis, you're at the two-minute mark. If you would conclude.
Restricted and escapement goals not being met, there is no further conservation action that the AYK subsistence fishers can take. Every fish counts. Thank you for supporting SB 128.
Thank you very much. Next in the queue is Adolph Loopy, also offline. Mr. Loopy.
Hello. Forest Bill 158, wholeheartedly. Closing June 10th through June 30. My name is Adolph Loopy. I am a subsistence hunter and fisherman. 22 is a member in Kuskokwim River Intertribal Fish Commission, and I represent them. I was born in Tundutu community of Tundutulak since 1954-2023. I got 7 bullets. Bullet number 1. 2019 first year of Trump crash. 2021 Trump stock crash in both Yukon and Kuskokwim River. 2022 Trump remain very, very low. In 2021, area interception over 210,000 chums, bycatch 51,500, total 261,500. Headed for Western Alaska, were legally taken in commercial fisheries. Board of Fish Management of area is prioritizing commercial fish over subsistence use of chum in violation of state law. We are herding in Tuntutulak for lack of fish due to over-regulated conservation.
Mr. Lupi, you're at the two-minute mark. If you would conclude, that would be great.
We need some salmon to store in summertime to meet our winter food. Salmon counts act now. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Next, we're going to go to, hold on, got to get down here. We're going to go to Akeni LIO, Stacy Arbolovsky. Ms. Arbolovsky.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, thank you for this opportunity to speak today. My name is Stacy Arbolovsky from Kusilov, Alaska. I'm born and raised in Alaska and have been commercial fishing for 49 years. I own and operate a drift gill net boat and permit in Ariam. I'm also a member of our fishing organization, Concerned Ariam Fishermen, but will be representing myself today. I'd like to speak on Senate Bill 128 and my opposition for this bill. This winter, the Board of Fish took actions against our June fishery to help let chum salmon pass through the fishing districts during times of abundance. The tools put into place were loss of fishing time, area closures, and the adaptive real-time fleet cooperative to stand down or move fishing areas was implemented. I feel that this was a good management plan for this fishery. Senate Bill 128 would also shut down the North Peninsula June fishery for stet and drift gillnet fishing, which wasn't part of Proposal 140. Genetic study and sampling have shown this fishery doesn't harvest any AYK chumps. The June fishery on the North Peninsula is very important to the stet and drift gillnet fleet. We cannot have our five sockeye rivers being overescaped from a closure that isn't based on science. Please ask yourself when making your decision on Senate Bill 128, what is the real motive of this bill? In closing, I urge the committee to not undermine the Board of Fish process and continue to let science manage our fisheries, not emotion and politics. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Next, turning to the Sitka LIO, Richard Davis. And I note for folks in the room and listening in, we'll probably run a few minutes past three. I think we may get six more folks in after that. Richard Davis in Sitka, please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Senate Judiciary Committee members. Am I audible there?
Yes.
I'm Richard Davis. I live in Juneau, 50-year continuous commercial fisherman here in southeast Alaska. Today, I have the privilege of representing the 323 Alaskan resident members and 93 non-resident owner members of the Seafood Producers Cooperative. Formed in 1944, we are the largest and longest surviving trade association of commercial fishermen on the North American continent. The state of Alaska, we pay $500,000 in raw fish tax, or we paid this year in business tax. At any given point in time, along the past four decades, the Department of Fish and Game and Alaskan citizens are preparing for or unpacking from a Board of Fish or Board of Game meeting. To follow and engage in Alaska's fisheries resource management takes a great commitment of time and money. Senate Bill 128 now brings the fisheries management process into our Capitol building. It burdens our lawmakers contravenes the Board of Fish decisions, and subjects the Department of Fish and Game to heretofore unexercised legislative authority. The fishermen I represent, their families and crew oppose this legislation, and we understand heartburn over Board of Fish decisions that are adverse or averse to us. We oppose this exercise in using the legislative process to rectify allocation or reinterpret science or management plans. We encourage all Alaskan lawmakers to steer widely away from fish legislation management decisions. If legislators use this process to manipulate fisheries once, they'll be entreated by constituents and others to repeat the process. We live with the Board of Fish decisions, however appropriate or painful. We get it. Some decisions we don't like either, but we are sure that using the legislative process as an alternative or a remedy is not wise or acceptable use of legislative resources. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Now turning to the Cordova LIO, we've got Dennis Zodra. If you want to proceed, Mr. Zodra.
Yes, can you hear me?
Yes.
Chairman Clayman and members of the committee, my name is Dennis Zodra. I'm a commercial fisherman here in Cordova, and I am testifying on my own behalf. I just want to express my extreme opposition to this SB 128 for the reasons that have been eloquently have mentioned previously. This science needs to determine why the fish aren't coming back to the Yukon and the Kuskokwim, and not a bunch of emotion. And, you know, I watched and have been very much involved with the Board of Fish process, and it's a great process. No one is ever happy with all of the decisions the board makes, but we have to respect that process, and to circumnavigate it with this bill is going to set precedent that will just dismantle something that has been vital to our state management for over 50 years. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Also from Cordova, we've got Phyllis Chiron. Ms. Chiron.
Good afternoon. I am Phyllis Chiron, and I am representing myself here in Cordova. I am strongly opposed to SB 128. Although the submission of this bill is probably based on good intentions, I doubt it was developed with a comprehensive understanding of the relative watersheds or the communities it will impact. I do not believe that this bill takes into account the biomass effects of all of the river systems or the far-reaching negative economic effects to families or communities in Area M. I don't want to beleaguer belabor the point, because a lot of people have made many points that I completely agree with. I am involved with the Board of Fish process, and in Anchorage this February, the Board of Fish did restrict time and area. It was a very difficult decision. It took much deliberation from the proper agencies and the participants. This submission of SB 128 blatantly undermines the power and devalues that entire public process, as well as the managerial plans that are in place. To pass Senate Bill 128 will set a precedent for people to override our regulatory and managerial agencies through the legislature, which will unnecessarily burden our senators and representatives. I am asking that you oppose SB 128 today. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. Turning to the Nome LIO, there's Charles Lean, and if you would state any affiliation you may have. And after Mr. Lean, we're going to take three people from Homer, and then we'll be adjourning for the day. Mr. Lean. Mr. Lean, can you hear us?
Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. Yes, Charles Lean. I am the chair of the Northern Norton Sound Advisory, Fishing Game Advisory Committee, but I'm speaking today from my heart, so consider it a personal testimony. I'm in support of Senate Bill 128 for several reasons. We've heard some very pertinent testimony regarding regulatory mandates and the board process and its importance to the state. A public process is only as good as its rules. And what happened And what is happening is the Board of Fish has not followed the regulations they themselves promulgated. So it's about public notice. It's about expectations. And I would also point out that the AYK and in particular has not fished in 3 years over the vast majority of AYK for chum salmon or Chinook salmon, and our limits on coho were very minimal as well. So that what we're talking about is not great science. We're talking about the missing of adequate escapement and the replenishment of those runs that support an area the size of Texas and about 130,000 residents of this state. So it's a big deal, and we're feeling it very distinctly.
Mr. Lean, you're at the two-minute mark, if you would please conclude.
I'll just reemphasize, this is a crisis. It needs to be addressed. The department and the Board of Fish are not following the rules, and it's time to step in and take over. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Then turning to the Homer LIO, we have Peter Hamry.
Can you hear me?
Yes, please proceed.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, my name is Peter Hamry. I'm from Anchorage. I'm representing myself, and I'll try to keep it short. I own and operate a fishing boat on the Alaska Peninsula. Over half of my income is from the June fishery. As such, I'm opposing this bill. While the Board of Fish members are carefully vetted, the legislature has neither the time nor expertise to start delving into fisheries management. Anyone can see this is a path we don't want to go down. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. Also from Homer, Scott Adams. Mr. Adams.
Yes, good afternoon. My name is Scott Adams, Commissioner and Chairman in committee. I worked out in AREM for 10 years, so I know about the systems that, you know, the chum cap and runs, and I feel that this is the wrong direction that we're going here. We've already seen that the board and the fishermen at AREM have come together, and they are trying to restrict the number of chum that they're catching, and they've already done testing and genetics last year, and it sounds like if there's not a fishery this year, then they're going to lose out on that information. I really think that they need that information. It's showing that most of the fish are coming from areas not including the YK or the Yukon or the Cusco. So I would like to see this bill not even go through the process. I really think that it shouldn't even be up in front of our legislative. It's already gone through a number of meetings, public, and so I really think that this is not a good way of setting our fishing. So thanks. Have a great day.
Thank you very much. And the last person we'll hear for public testimony today, but there's certainly many in the list we're not getting to, is Danny Cumberlodge, also from the Homer LIO.
Hello. Thank you. My name is Danny Cumberlodge. I'm an AREM fisherman, born and raised in Sandpoint. Still reside there today. I oppose this Senate bill because I was at the meeting. It took 12 days at the Board of Fish with all the science and information, everything that was brought up. I think the Board of Fish made the best decision that it could, and everybody sacrificed. And at this point, if you were to adopt this bill, it would basically make the Board of Fish pointless. If any decision they made could be overturned by the Senate or a House bill or whatever it was. So I'm in opposition to this. So thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Can I just have some closing comments?
Senator Olson, I'll give you about 1 minute for closing comments. Please come forward.
Thank you very much, distinguished members of the committee as well as the chairman. Thank you very much for hearing this bill. It's certainly something that is on both sides, that it's on everybody's mind. But as you listen to what was going on, you heard that there were several hundred permit holders, but you got tens, up to 130,000 people whose lives have been decimated by no fish going on. And if those, for those people that are out there that are enthralled and saying that the Fish Board of Fish and the Alaska Department of Fish and Game is doing such a good job, the crash, why we had three disastrous crashes in the last 3 years they've been declining for the last 4 years. And so I would say that the people that are on the Yukon would beg to differ. Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you very much. We are going to adjourn for the day. We are going to leave public testimony open. And so we will adjourn for the day, and we'll continue to hold this bill for further review. The time is now 3:09 p.m. Our next meeting is scheduled for Wednesday, April 26th. That's next Wednesday at 1:30 p.m. We're not meeting on Monday. We stand adjourned. Again, the time now is 3:09 p.m.